Please recite a Surah Fatiha. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين أما بعد فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه المتين بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم ألف لام ميم أحسب الناس أن يتركوا أن يقولوا آمنا وهم لا يفتنون صلوات على محمد وآل محمد. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in this verse of Surah An-Kabut at the beginning of the chapter that does man think that he can say, I am a Muslim and get away with it? Does man think that he can say, I believe and get away with it? He will be tried. He will be tested. And hence, for everyone who is a Muslim and who is a believer, Allah is letting them know that you are going to face fitna. You are going to face problems and difficulties in your life if you are a believer. And these difficulties will be a test from Allah. So when we look at the life of a believer, you see that his life is full of trials, is full of fitna. And now, as I said yesterday, there are different types of fitna and trials. Sometimes you see that he says that you are going to be tried by the way of fear. Sometimes you will be tried by the way of hunger. Sometimes you will be tried by the loss of wealth. Sometimes you will be tried by the loss of your life. And sometimes by the loss of your children. But you will be tried. And you will be tested. And therefore, in the life of a mu'min and a Muslim, there are four reasons why these tests come. The four reasons why these trials, why he's put into these trials. And we need to understand these reasons in order to be successful in the tests and trials. If we don't know why these tests are happening and why these trials are taking place, then when we go through those trials, there's no way we are going to be successful in these trials, in this fitna that we face. And we will be failing and we'll be losing. And hence we need to understand this. So Allah in this ayat has made it clear that iman is the reason for testing a person. If someone claims to be a mu'min, he will be tested. In the hadith it has also come that those who claim to love Ahlul Bayt, they will also be tested. So one means of test or one reason for testing us is iman, claim of faith. And the second reason of testing us is the claim that we love Ahlul Bayt. That's why you see that whenever someone used to go to the imam, and we have many hadiths regarding this, that they used to go to the imam and say that, I want to be a Shia. The imam would reply back to him and said, are you ready to face difficulties? Are you ready to face trials? So from that, we can understand that the Imam is letting us know that if you claim to love us, you will be tested. You will be tried. And there are four reasons for these tests and trials. The first reason I mentioned yesterday. And to us, it should be the most important reason we look for. The most important reason we look at before we look into any other reason, the other three. Islam says, look at this reason first, and that is these trials. One of the reasons they come about in our life and we go through life with difficulties and hardships is because of our own sins. Of our own sins. That's why Imam Ali says in Nahj al-Balagha, where he says, Allahumma ghfir li adhunub allati tunzilul bala. Allah, forgive me for those sins that bring down difficulties and miseries in my life. So there are certain sins that bring down misery. And hence, when we see why we are facing these difficulties in life, why we are going through these problems in life, why our life is miserable, first reason we need to look at is that, am I doing any of these sins that bring down these problems? I mentioned two yesterday, and that was making fun of believers and disrespecting parents. If you want to make your life miserable, then these two are the easiest way to do it. If you want to be unsuccessful in anything that you do in life, then hey, this is the best way of doing it. Just disrespect your parents. And you know what? Allah will make sure that you're never successful in anything in your life. This is a promise from Allah. Right? Because it is a direct challenge to Him. And there are other sins also, and I don't have the time to go through this. You can ask me in the Q&A. Right? About the other reasons. And what are the other sins that bring down these miseries in our life. And we can go through that. But now I come to the second reason, and that is what we need to understand today. What is the second reason that we have these tests and these trials? Why does Allah put us through these trials? And I'm going to explain that to you if I hear a loud salawat. Sometimes, if you are watching a movie, and let's say if you don't watch a movie, you're reading a book. If you watch a clip of a movie, a scene from a movie, or if you read a chapter in a book, you know, you see the whole book has a beginning and an ending. The movie has a beginning and an ending. And if you just see one clip of it, or one chapter of it, you will question, and you will have many questions in your mind. You know, you'll have many questions in your mind. For example, you read a chapter that the villain is oppressing the hero. And so you think that this is unjust. This is wrong. This is bad. And the problem is, if we don't read the whole book, we would never understand what happened, whether justice took place or not. You see, this happens to us because sometimes we just see very little of what is there. Prophet Musa once saw a short clip of natural order, something that's happening, and it was astonishing. He was shocked by it. He was like, what's happening? I mean, he saw this scene. It's like a scene from a movie, just one clip, one chapter from a book, and he saw it. And even a prophet like Musa was astonished by what he saw. In the middle of a desert, he was at an oasis, and near that relaxing oasis was a hill. And he went on the hill to meditate and to relax. When he went on the hill to meditate and relax, he was looking at the oasis where there was a pond, and he saw a person coming to the pond, a rider on a horseback. He came to the pond and drank from it, relaxed for a while, and got up, got on his horse, and went off. As he was going off, just Musa is looking from the hill. He's far away, looking down on the hill, and he's looking at the guy. He goes off, he sees him riding off, and then as he sees him riding off, he sees that he forgot his purse and his money bag where he was resting. He didn't take the money bag. He saw the money bag, the guy went. And so Musa, before he could say anything, the guy was gone. He was gone before he could say anything. Then what happened is that someone else came, and that was a shepherd. He came with a sheep. And he came to the pond and he let the sheep drink from the pond, and you know, he drank also, and looking around he saw the money bag. Now in those days, money bag is like your bank account. They didn't have banks back there. So everything they earned in their life, their whole life savings will be in their money bag. That's it. They would carry around their life savings with them no matter where they go. And hence he saw the money bag, and Musa saw him run towards the money bag, open it up, and whatever he saw, he was smiling. Inside the bag, whatever he saw there and witnessed, he was like, wow, look at this. He was smiling. Musa is looking at this, right? And then he smiles at what he sees in the money bag, closes it up, then looks to his left and to his right to see if anyone's around. And he sees no one's around. So right away he takes the money bag and takes his sheep and hurries away from there, lest the owner comes back and, you know, ask for it back. He goes away from there. Musa is like, before he could say anything, he's gone. And then after that, and it is all happening within an hour. I mean, one guy goes, the other guy comes, he sees this, he goes, and then he sees a third person coming, and this is an old pious person. He comes there. You know, I mean, like some people are so pious, you see them on their face, you know, so pious and walking. Like, wow, this guy is, you know, really holy person, you know. And you see that in them. So he was walking down and he was like, you know, he came there and he was resting. And he also was resting. Musa was looking at that. You see? And then what happened is that as the old guy, the old person who was pious was resting, then the first guy came back who lost the money. He came back looking for his money back. He's looking around frantically to find it. He couldn't find it. He looked at the old pious person. He goes up to him and whatever he said, Musa couldn't hear it. But as if he was like arguing with him that you took the money. And the old guy was saying, I didn't take the money. He said, yes, you did. You know, you took the money. Now tell me, where did you hide it? Where did you hide it? You know, and you know, the argument escalated and the guy took out his sword and killed the old guy. He killed the old guy. And after he was dead, then he just ran away from there. Now, Prophet Musa is a prophet of Allah. I mean, he has a higher intellect and a deeper understanding than all of us put together. And here he is watching this scene, and then right away, I mean, he couldn't understand what happened. The injustice, the wrong that happened. This person, I mean, an innocent, a thief took the bag and ran away, and an innocent person was killed unjustly. And that to an old pious person. He is killed unjustly. And then he couldn't understand it. It was astonishing. And he asked Allah, Allah, what kind of injustice is this? I mean, this is not the rule of Fir'aun. This is not an unjust rule. This is not the rule of Namrud. Neither Fir'aun is here, neither Namrud is here. There's no unjust ruler here. This is your government. This is your land. How can this injustice happen in your rule? No one is, there's no unjust ruler here to do injustice to others. This just happened in the middle of the jungle, in the middle of the desert, and you are the ruler here. You are the king here. How did this injustice happen in your kingdom? How did it happen? You see, he was confused. And we would be also. He looked at it and we would be like, you know, Allah, how can you do this? So what happened is that Allah replied back to Musa. He said, Musa, what did you see? He says, I saw injustice. And what was the injustice? He said, I saw that someone's money was taken away by a thief and an innocent person was punished for it. Allah said, Musa, take a look again. Are you sure this is injustice that happened? Musa said, Allah, what I see is injustice. You tell me what it is. So Allah explained to him. He explained to him. He said, listen, Musa, you don't know the big picture. You don't know the big picture. The person who lost the money, he had a father. And the shepherd had a father. The shepherd's father had lent the money to this person's father to do business together. But this person's father, the one who lost the money, his father was killed. And no one knew that this money was owed to this person. It should belong to him. And now that person is also dead. Now the shepherd is his inheritor. He gave the money. That money belongs to his heirs, his children. The shepherd is the heir of that money that was lent to this family. Musa, the shepherd wasn't stealing the money. I was returning the loan his father gave to this person's man. And that money in the bag was the same amount that his father had lent to this brother, this person's father. Now Musa looked at that, but he said, but what about the old pious person? The old pious person, what about him? He said, you know, the money, this guy who lost the money, the horse rider, you know, who killed his father? This old pious person wasn't always pious in his life. He wasn't always pious in his life. You know, when you're old, you know, you have to become pious. There's nothing else to do. You know, that's the case. In his heydays, you know, this guy went around the block doing some wrong. And one of the things he did wrong was that he killed this man's father. And no one knew about that murder. No one knew about that killing. And today, I had him take revenge for his father's death. I had him take revenge for his father's death. Now my friends, here's what happens. Musa saw a scene. And to Musa and even us, we look at it as complete injustice. And Allah is saying that what you think is complete injustice is complete justice in the eyes of Allah. You see the difference? And the reason why we think that is injustice is because we only saw one clip of the movie or one chapter of the book. We didn't see the beginning, we didn't see the ending. And hence to us, when we just have this view, that we only can see that much, so it seems unjust, it seems wrong, and it seems oppressive. But when you know the whole picture, then you know that this is not injustice, but this is the process of justice. My friends, the second reason why we go through difficulties, you can understand through this, is that Allah knows the big picture. We don't see the big picture. We don't know what the big picture is. So Allah does and gives us difficulties for certain reasons, included in this one reason that he explains in the Quran that I'm going to tell you right now. But he gives us these difficulties so that something else that is coming, the big picture that Allah knows, he is going to make sure that the bigger harm doesn't happen to us. This is why Allah gives difficulties to believers. And Allah explained that to Musa again. And you know the incident, and I'm sure you have heard it many times by other people. And I'm not going to go into the details of it. I just want to explain to you why we go through fitna, the second reason that Allah explains in the Quran, if you send me a salawat. You see, my friends, Allah showed the reasons to Musa. And this is the incident where Musa met Khidr, Prophet Khidr. And you know that Prophet Khidr, his name is not mentioned in the Quran. Nowhere in the Quran. And people always say that, hey, why is his name not mentioned in the Quran? Well, the reason is that because the Quran is not a history book where it should give the names and date of birth of every person that's there. It's a book of guidance. It just gives you what you need to be guided. And hence, when this incident happened, that Musa met Khidr. Now, Musa is the expert of the Shariat. He's the master of Shariat. He is an ocean of the law of Allah, meaning the law of Allah is an ocean and Musa is the master of that. He is the Ulul Azm prophet, and in the rankings of the prophet, he is number 3. In the rankings of the prophet, after our prophet being number 1 and Ibrahim being number 2, Musa is number 3. And obviously, you see that Musa, his ranking is up there. And he is the master of the law of Allah. I mean, the law of Allah is there and he's the master of it. And on the other hand, he wanted to know the knowledge that Khidr had. Khidr was also a prophet, but his knowledge was different. His knowledge didn't have to deal with Shariat. There's another type of knowledge that is called Takwiniyah. Ilmu Takwiniya is the knowledge of Allah that is happening behind closed doors. Allah says He is Alimul Ghayb wa Shahada. He is the Alim of the unseen and the Alim of the seen. What is seen, the knowledge of the seen, what is apparent is the Shariat of Allah, the law of Allah, the Deen of Allah. What is hidden is another set of rules, another set of principles that have to deal with ghaib. Khidr was a prophet of Allah, but for the ghaib, not for the apparent. And hence, his knowledge and what he did is not limited to the law of Allah. It is limited to the principles that are guided or that are the guide in the ghaib, in the unseen. Musa wanted to know that. Meaning this knowledge of the ghaib, the rules of the ghaib, Khidr knew. The rules of the law, Musa knew. That's why Allah describes their meeting as Majma'ul Bahrain, the meeting of two oceans. One was the ocean of the knowledge of Shariat, one was the ocean of the knowledge of Ghaib. And so when these two met, Musa wanted to ask Khidr that, you have a knowledge that I don't know. I want to learn it. Khidr said, listen, yes, I have the knowledge of that, but you won't be able to handle it. Musa is like, what do you mean I can't handle it? Of course I can handle it. You know, of course I can handle it. If I can handle Bani Israel, what do you think? I can't handle this? I mean, Musa's patience has to be up there if he can deal with Bani Israel and get away with it. You know, so obviously his patience cannot be questioned. Musa was one of the most patient prophet. He was patient. Right? And here he is saying, the most patient prophet is saying that, listen, I'll handle it. And Khidr is saying, you can't. You won't be able to be patient with me. Let's see. Alright, let's go on. So what happened is that now, they went along, and you know the story, I'm just going to go through it fast. They went along and they came to a village where there are people who were fishermen. And they had a boat that they used to use and go out and fish and come back, and that was the means of their income. These two get in there, and lo and behold, Khidr makes a hole in the boat. He starts making a hole in the boat and makes a hole. Musa's like, what are you doing? I'm making a hole. I know you're making a hole, but this is not right. You see, obviously it's not right. For example, you know, destroying other people's property is wrong. The Sharia says it's wrong, it's haram. It's like, for example, you go into the lot over here and you see a nice car and say, you know what? Let me put a scratch on it. What do you call that? This is haram. You cannot do that. You can't destroy other people's property. You can't harm other people's property. He looked at Khidr, and what is Khidr doing? He's destroying someone's property. So Musa is acting according to his knowledge, the knowledge that Allah taught him. Khidr made a hole in someone's boat. I mean, what kind of a prank is this? You know, and right when he said that, you know, Prophet Khidr said, see, I told you, can't be patient with me. He said, all right, you know what? Okay. I want to learn the knowledge you have, so I will be patient, right? I'll ignore this. Now they go on. They go on. And, you know, they come across this nice-looking child. Beautiful child, you know. Nice-looking child. And Musa, obviously, looking at the child, you know. Anyone would be like, oh, look at this cute child, you know. This cute child, admiring the cute child and this and that. And he's thinking that Khidr is also a prophet, right? So here goes Khidr and he goes there and kills the child. And Musa, what is this? What do you do that for? He says, listen, I mean, this is a child. He didn't do anything wrong to you. You just killed a child. You see, again, hurting someone, killing someone, especially a child, is a sin. It's haram. And a prophet of Allah is killing someone's child. He just kills him. And he looks at this and he's like shocked. Like, what is this? What's going on here? And obviously, I mean, looking at Musa at that time, right? He's getting like really impatient now. He's really getting impatient. You just killed someone innocent. You killed a child. Are you the right person that I have to follow? Are you sure you're Khidr? Who made you a prophet? Where's your resume? Let me see it. I mean, come on, man. There's something wrong here. You killed a child. This is not normal. This is not normal behavior. And that too of a prophet. I know people. Man, I'm a prophet myself. We don't do these things. You see? But you see, he killed a child. And then, you know, he said, listen, I told you, you cannot be patient with me. And Musa said, all right, you know what? Okay. Right? I'll even ignore this. Let's go forward. They went forward. And they came to this place where these terrible scoundrels lived. They had no manners. They were rude. They were unjust. They were just cruel people. And Musa was so upset at them, you know, that, you know, he told Prophet Khidr, let's get out of here. These people are bad. These people are really wrong people. And we shouldn't be dealing with them. So, okay. They start walking out. And when they come to the backyard, they see that their wall is broken down. The wall of these people is broken down. You know, it's like, you know, for example, here we don't have walls, we have fences. You know, someone's fence is damaged, let's say. And Musa is upset, right? Nah, I mean, he wants to damage more of it, you know. And here goes Khidr, and he says, "Or help me to build this up. And he starts building up the wall. And now, that's it. Musa said, listen, really, you know, you kill an innocent boy and you're helping these scoundrels. What kind of religion are you following? What kind of religion are you following? I mean, what is this? What's going on here? What is the problem here? That time, Khidr said, all right, you know what? That's it. It's over. You know, I can't have it anymore. I can't have you along with me anymore. You know, it's like, for example, you know, you have, like, for example, you do your own job and you're used to doing your own job and being alone. And if someone comes along with you who's a trainee, you know, and he's like nagging in your ear, and you're like, okay, man, finish. Listen, you go on your own now. That's it. He can't handle it. He's like, that's it, you know. You're on your own. You see, but we're talking about Prophet Musa here, right? We're talking about someone who was not just knowledgeable, but deep and could understand these things. And you know, here on one hand, you had this prophet and this prophet. What just happened here? And I want to give you this idea now. From here, you understand the second reason. Allah, what did Allah do to Musa? What did he do to him? Allah just opened a window into the world of ghaib. What's happening behind closed doors? What's happening behind the curtains? What Allah is doing behind the curtains, the rules there are different than what we have in the apparent world that we are living in. When we see that, we look at it and we cannot understand it because our logic fails there. Our logic fails there. So now Musa had to be, a prophet like Musa had to be explained. And Khidr explains that to him. Listen, let me tell you. That boat belonged to fishermen. And that was their only means of income. And a king was looking for boats. He is behind and he's looking for boats to go and put them in his navy. If this boat was working and functional, the king would take it. I made a hole in the boat so that the king wouldn't take the boat and he would leave it. Now tell me, understand from here. This is how much is mentioned in the ayat. Now the rest I'm explaining to you. Now tell me, which one would be worse for the fishermen? The hole in the boat or their boat being confiscated? Understand this. Allah is making them go through this difficulty of having a hole in the boat so that He can protect them that from the confiscation of their boat. You see, Allah is giving them harm. He's giving them a trial. He's giving them difficulty by that hole in the boat. That hole in the boat is difficult for them to deal with. They'll have to repair it. It's bothersome, but it's better than if their boat was confiscated. So you see, the first reason Allah gives or why He gives you difficulties is so that the impending harm that is coming, which is bigger than this harm, Allah can protect you from that harm by making you go through the smaller harm. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Now you see the reason. This is the first reason. Now he explains about the second one. He says, well, about the child. You were also protective of the child, right? Now about the child. This child belongs to two believing parents. Yeah, to you he looks innocent. You know, everyone looks innocent when they're young. I mean, if you can imagine, Saddam Hussein was once a cute boy. If you saw him when he was 3, you would be like cuddling him also. Right? Nice kid, you know. Look at this cute kid. You know, everyone's cute when they're young. This boy has a believing parents, pious parents. And he is going to turn out to be a tyrant. Allah wants to protect the parents. So, He took this child away so He can give them a better child. a child who would serve them and who would be good to them. So now, you might think this is horrible, this and that, but Allah wants to give them something better. So here, Allah explains the second reason why He gives you trial. He might take away a blessing from you, it is a trial. But this blessing is being taken away from you so He can give you a better blessing in this instead. You see, this is the reason why. So there could be a better blessing He can give you. So if we are like, we lose something, we're like, oh, how horrible, how terrible, and what happened? What happened is that Allah wants to give you something better than this. He wants to give you something much better than this. That's why He's taking this away from you. You are a believer. He's not taking this away so He can give you something worse. He's taking it away so He can give you something better. This is the second reason He explains. And the third reason is the wall. When He sees the wall, that wall, He repaired it, and you think that these are scoundrels? Well, it has nothing to do with the scoundrels. What it had to do is with our orphans. It had to do with orphans. They were orphans, and they had their inheritance hidden underneath this wall. If the wall was broken down, then it would be seen by these cruel people and they would take the wealth of these orphans. So in order to protect their inheritance, I made the wall so that when they grow up and become adults, they'll find their inheritance here. They'll find it then so that it can be protected from these unjust people. Their wealth can be protected from these unjust people. So now you see, Allah is making these orphans go through poverty in their young age. Not because He doesn't like them, but because He wants to give their inheritance when they're able to use it. When they're able to possess it. Otherwise, if they find it now, then these people will take it away from them because they are children. They won't be able to defend their wealth. So the third reason why Allah gives us difficulties, why He's explaining in this incident, is why? Because of the fact that these people, that He wants to protect the believers and wants to give them their what they deserve at the time they are able to take it. And so with this we understand, my friends, the reason all this is happening is because we just see a few of what is in our eyes. That's all we see. We do not see what is ahead of us and what is behind us. We don't see the whole picture. Allah sees the whole picture. That's why we put our trust in Allah, that He's the one who makes decisions for us. If we make decisions based on the short scene that we see, then we will always be making misjudgments and miscalculations in our life. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. This is how we know. This is the second reason of why difficulties happen to us. Because Allah is giving these difficulties so He can save us from an impending harm that is greater than this. Or that He wants to give us something better than what He's taking away from us. This is why Allah is giving us. And if you know the incident that happened with Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam, and you must have heard this before. It's just this incident that happened, that this man who came, if you remember, a man who came and asked about war, that he asked the Imam that, "I heard that you can, you know, foretell the future, right?" He said, "I want to know something about my future." You know, so Imam said, "It's not good for you." He insisted. He said, "No, it's not good for you." At the end, Imam said, all right. He says, "You know, your horse is going to die. Your horse is going to die next week." When the man heard that, right away he went and he sold his horse. He went and sold his horse. He got the money for it. The horse went to another owner and it did die. It did die in a week. But now he didn't take the loss for it. The other owner took the loss. I mean, if you had a lemon car, you know, if you know your car is a lemon, you would sell it too without telling the other guy, right? It breaks down in his hand, you know, he's responsible for it. And he comes after you, say, "Hey, listen, I sold it to you as is, you know, take it. You know, the issue is that you didn't go through the loss, he went through the loss. Right? So he was happy he made the money. He came back to the imam and said, you said, you know, I will lose, but you know, I made a profit. I want no more. Imam said, listen, it's not good for you. I want no more. He insisted. Imam said, all right, your house is going to burn down, you know, break down. You lose your house. As soon as he heard that, you know, obviously, he came back and he sold his house. You know, for example, if we know that we have a sinkhole in our house and the house is going down, right, we get rid of the house, obviously the other owner faces the problem. We are out of it. We took the money we owed. Right? So he did the same thing. He sold the house and now the other guy, the other owner took the loss. And he was scot-free and he's happy. Good. He said, you see, the imam, I mean, what's wrong with the imam? I mean, you know, he's wrong and I'm right. You know, I'm gaining from this. I'm earning of this, you know, knowing the future. I know now. So he goes to the imam again. Now when the imam sees him, he didn't wait until the guy asked him. The imam said, you want to know the future? He said, yes, yes, I want to know the next thing that's going to happen to me. He said, you're going to die. He said, you're going to die. And this guy is now, what do you mean I'm going to die? I'm young. I can't die. I'm young. How can I die? Why am I going to die? Then the imam said, well, because Allah was going to take your horse and your house to extend your life. But because you got to know what happened, what's going to happen, you sold yourself short. You see, when Allah makes decisions for us, He makes them in the best way. Even if we have to go through a certain loss, Allah knows what's coming is better. So when we get some difficulty to us, we are like, Allah, it's good. Because we know that you're doing this because something else is coming and we are happy to go through this. We should be happy to go through this. That's the reason we leave things in Allah's hands. You know, many people, the reason in a lot of things they do, they make istikhara. Just to have that peace that, you know, we also heard from Allah's book. You know, that peace comes in your heart. That He made the decision, you know. So even if it goes wrong, we know that Allah is going to make it. We don't make the decision. That's why Allah kept it hidden from us, what's going to happen to us and the hardships we go through to make us understand. This, my friends, this is how we need to understand. That we don't see the big picture. We only see what's in front of us. That's why we think it's difficult. We think it's a trial. We think it's misery. But it's not. It's really not. And this is something that we must really have in our mind. That when these miseries and these difficulties are happening, the reason, second reason that Allah gives it to us is because He wants to protect us from a greater harm that's coming. Or He wants to give us a greater blessing by taking this blessing away from us. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala. You know, when we look at the examples of history, we'll see. You know, when you have to go through humiliation and disgrace, it's very hard. A princess was taken as a slave, and she went through slavery and was sold as a slave. It was hard. It was difficult. It was very bad. And you know, it's not easy. But you know what? That same princess who went through that slavery and went through that hardship and difficulties and that disgrace and humiliation, in return for that, she became the wife of an imam and the mother of the imam who's going to rule the world. So I asked Narges, tell me, was the reward better or was the difficulty harder? You went through the difficulties, but Allah rewarded you with what? That you are the your child is going to rule this world. He is the imam of this world. I mean, are you willing to go through that again to get the same reward? You see, the reward Allah is giving is much better than the difficulty you go through if you are a believer. The reward Allah is going to give you is much better than the difficulty you go through. Yeah, same thing happened to another princess who came from Persia. Brought as a slave. Humiliated and disgraced. Men coming and eyeing her out to see if they want to buy her. You know, she went through that. And if it wasn't for Imam Ali, she would have been sold as a slave. Imam Ali rescued her. He rescued her. And he brought her. And he had her married to his son, Imam Hussein. And she became the mother of Imam Zainul Abidin. You see, you understand this? And she says that there were times when she was being taken as a slave that she made dua to Allah that Allah, death is better than this. Now I ask Shahrbano that Allah rewarded you by being a wife of an imam and a mother of an imam. Now tell me, if Allah had answered your dua, would you be happy now? It was good Allah didn't answer your dua. And He had a better reward for you. You were thinking that death is better than this life. But you see, the reward Allah gave you is much better than that. You see, this is my friends, when a man goes through trials, then Allah has something planned for him. He has something planned for him. And this is what we see. You know, sometimes difficulties and hardships can be very intense when you are Ahlul Bayt, when you are the family of the Prophet, when you are the Imams of the Ummah. It is difficult. It's very hard. You know, my friends, it's not easy, you know. Allah wanted to show what intensity is when it came to hardship, when it came to difficulties. That's why He gave the test and the trial of Karbala, so that we can understand that, listen, whatever you're going through, you haven't gone through anything like the family of the Prophet has gone through. You know, it's not easy. Family of the Prophet, what they went through in Karbala and after Karbala is nothing. I mean, what we go through is nothing compared to what they have gone through. What they have gone through and what they faced. My friends, Imam Sajjad, you know, the pain he had was not from the neck brace on his neck. You know, he had a heavy neck brace that is on his neck. And the neck brace is heavy. And they put that neck brace in such a way that to hold it up, they put nails inside it so it goes into his neck. You know, this was what he went through. He went through chains in his hands and feet. In the scorching desert, he was walking bare feet. And to make matters worse, they would throw thorns in his way, so he walks over those thorns. And the thorns would go inside his feet, and it will bleed. And then, on top of that, he is still recovering from his illness. An imam is going through that, but you see, all these things he went through. I mean, imagine if one of those things we face, you know, you would hardly be able to take it. But the imam went through that, but at the same time, when you look at it, all of these things that he faced, you see, none of them had given him pain. But what did give him pain was the sight of his sisters and his aunts in the bazaar of Kufa and Sham being ridiculed by the people. What gave him pain was his little sister Sakina wanting to cry for her father, but every time she cried, they would come and slap her in the face. For a brother, this was what was hard for him. The relationship of this brother and sister was a unique relationship in the whole journey of Karbala. This relationship, you know, we have many relationships in that have to deal with Ashura. But this is unique because this is the one that lasted the longest in grief and pain. The relationship between Imam Sajjad and Sukaina. Both of these, you see, went through so many things together. Ashura is there. But you see, after Ashura, what happened? They went through so much. When Imam Sajjad was walking in his chains and on those thorns, it is Sakina who used to look at that and tears would flow out of her eyes in pain. She would be the one crying. She would be the one crying in pain, looking at Imam Sajjad, wincing in his own pain. He is wincing and he doesn't care about his pain, but he looks at Sakina and you see that Sakina is crying. And then what used to hurt Imam Sajjad was that every time Sakina cried, they would come with a whip and beat Sakina until she stops crying. This poor girl lost her whole family, is not able to cry, and Imam Sajjad feels the pain for Sakina and for her that she is not able to cry. And they couldn't even meet each other. You know what? After a while, it was known that Imam Sajjad is the brother of Sukaina. When the soldiers knew this, and the soldiers knew that Imam Sajjad was close to her, and that was his weak point, then you know what will happen? That whenever Imam Sajjad, because they made it such for him, they wanted him to die in the journey. That's why they made it so hard on him. And Imam Sajjad in his pain would stumble down sometimes, isn't able to walk, and he would stumble down. They wouldn't come and beat up Imam Sajjad. They would go and start beating Sakina until Imam Sajjad stands up. Imam Sajjad would use all his willpower to stand up because he doesn't want his sister to be beaten up. Sukaina would see that and she would know that it is Imam Sajjad who's going through more pain than I am, seeing me being hurt. This was this difficulty that these two were facing. And this is why you see, when at nights they used to encamp, then all the ladies would be huddled into one place and Imam Sajjad would be in another place. In the desert, they would sit. So, the rest of the army would go into their camps. They would have some guards over there nearby, but they would go into their camps and rest. And then the night would come, and everyone in the state of their thirst and pain, they would just be unto themselves, not making any noise, because that was the rule. Any noise, they would come and they will start to beat them if they make any noise. So they wouldn't talk with one another. They would slowly whisper to one another, and they would slowly go to sleep. And everyone would go to sleep. Zainab would make sure that everyone is asleep before she goes to sleep. Sakina would feign her sleep. She would act as if she is sleeping. When everyone goes to sleep, when Zainab also goes to sleep, 4-year-old Sakina would open her eyes and see that everyone is asleep. When she sees that everyone is asleep, then she would use that opportunity to crawl on her knees and her elbows. She would crawl between the ladies. She would crawl between the ladies and get to the side where Imam Sajjad is laying down. She would get near Imam Sajjad and she would look at Imam Sajjad and his hands and feet are tied in chains. And Imam Sajjad, he is worn out from the day's journey. She would come to him, she would go to his feet, and she would take his feet and put it on her lap. And she would now cry over those feet, and she would wash away the blood with her tears. And then one by one, she would take out the thorns that are inside his feet. One by one, she would take out the thorns inside his sheet. And then he would see that and he would give her comfort by saying, Sukaina, my sister, because of me you are going through this pain. Sukaina would then cry. One day, one night when she was doing this, you see she cried out a lot. She cried out aloud. And when she cried out aloud, that's when the soldiers, they heard the cries. They came running to see what's going on. And they saw that Sakina is helping Imam Sajjad. And she is at the feet of Imam Sajjad. So they said, oh, you want to help your brother? So they started beating up Sakina. And Imam Sajjad cried out to them and said, beat me all you want, but don't touch my sister Sakina. سَيَعْلَمُ الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا أَيَّ مُنْقَلَبٍ يَنْقَلِبُونَ Ya Mahmood bihaqqi Muhammad. Ya Allah bihaqqi Ali. يا فاطر السماوات بحق فاطمة يا محسن بحق حسن يا قديم الأحسان بحق والله we ask you to give us the tawfiq to be on the right path, to give us the wisdom to understand your guidance. Allah, we ask you to hasten the reappearance of our Imam, to make us his helper when he comes. وآخر الدعوان الحمد لله رب العالمين ماتم حسين يا حسين حسين
Ya Hussein, Ya Hussein, Ya Hussein.